With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Mraz. It was another day of takes, laughs, and memorable moments. Keep it locked here. It's the best of the DA show.
Coming off of last season, of course, the New England Patriots and Cam Newton didn't seem to have much of a relationship going forward. Obviously, Cam struggled mightily last year. He was pretty brutal through the air. The Patriots are in a division where the Bills have leapfrogged them as the power team. And, of course, the Dolphins were just an eyelash away from making the playoffs themselves, and they've got a young quarterback. And some are thinking that maybe they'll make a move to perhaps upgrade at quarterback with that slot. Could they pry Deshaun Watson away from the Houston Texans? And the Jets should have a better situation moving forward and could have a new quarterback as well, drafting number two. So all signs pointed to the Patriots this offseason upgrading from Cam Newton, right? Obviously, got to upgrade from Cam Newton. And yet, the most recent reports out of Boston are that the two could come back together in 2021. No. Yes. The Patriots, having been at least talking to the two teams that have traded quarterbacks already this offseason, Matthew Stafford and Carson Wentz, thought that the prices on those were prohibitively high and don't have a high enough draft pick to be in the mix on those top two or three quarterbacks. And so some reports floating out of Boston are there could be a reunion between Cam and the Patriots. Oh boy. Well, let's pick this apart. Could Cam Newton, after last year's unbelievably underwhelming campaign, actually return to the Patriots? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Newton leans forward, waits on the snap, and he takes it. Newton back two steps. Looks to his right. He double clutches. Nope. Comes back to his left and slips the rush of action. Newton sprints to the 10, cuts it right across the 5. Newton fights his way to the end zone. A dive for a touchdown, Patriots!
Yes. Hell yes.
Especially, definitely, with the offseason. You get offseason, you got OTAs.
Everything. I don't have to. I'm getting tired of changing, bro. I'm at a point in my career, bro. I know it. I know way more than I knew last year.
Correct.
Now, you give me what you just said.
Yeah. It's a different ball game. It's a different ball game.
Okay. Not even that. A system with me, you know what I'm saying? Like, they know me. Doughboy knows me. Jacoby knows me. Bud knows me. The young tight ends know me. The younger guys that's going to come in, this is how Cam react. Like, we're still trying to flush out the 20 years of how it used to be. And I'm going in and I'm saying, well, that's not me.
Is there a chance you go back to New England?
There's always a chance for everything.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That audio, courtesy of Patriots Radio Network and the I Am Athlete podcast. Oh, man. You know, it snowed for about the 107th straight day yesterday here in the Northeast. And I'm shoveling for, I don't know, the 53rd straight day of that. And I had to wake up today and look at the darkened skies, gloomy weather. Realize we still have nearly a week to go in the month of February, so I don't know how many more dozen snowstorms we can get at that time. And this is the best thing I could have woken up to. Yeah, Cam Newton back with the Patriots. Yeah, you guys should totally do that. You guys, that would be great. I think that would really work out well for you. Yep, the Patriots, definitely. See what Cam's got left. Yeah, uh-huh. No, I think it was just because he didn't have enough time to work with the receivers last year because of COVID. Totally. Yeah, and then he had that midseason bout with COVID, and that definitely must have taken a lot out of him, and I'm sure he was distracted. And, you know, he just needs a full off season. Yeah, definitely. Definitely just needs a full off season, and things will brighten up. Absolutely. I would advise the Patriots to re-sign Cam. Sure, yeah, even to a long-term deal. Give a lot of guaranteed money, too. And Cam, you should definitely, I mean, hey, if anybody's going to put you in the right position to win it, definitely would be Bill Belichick, right? Yeah, oh yeah, of course. Oh, that would just be delightful. Look, all due respect, I'm not the heckler at Cam Newton's camp here. I've got respect for the guy. He was an NFL MVP once upon a time. But dude is washed. It didn't work last year. And it didn't work for two reasons. Cam has a body that has taken a lot of abuse over the years. And they don't have a lot of weapons for Cam to have drawn attention away for. So you're kind of a sitting duck back there if you can't really sit in the pocket and dissect. Tom Brady can, and so Tom Brady can elevate that team to maybe they would have been 9-7 instead of 7-9 last year, maybe 10-6, but that's even Tom Brady was not getting that Patriots team to a Super Bowl last year. So Cam's going to be 32 years old when this season rolls around. Last year threw for 8 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. 8-10. I mean, are you kidding me? And you'll say, well, D.A., he had pretty good numbers on the ground. Okay. How much do you want to focus your offense on the ground around a 32-year-old quarterback? Do you think that that's a smart way to play this? I mean, if you watched Cam last year, he had a handful of games where he didn't crack the 100-yard passing mark. 100 yards passing. It was hard to watch him last year. He threw for over 300 yards twice the entire season. Twice. Once was against the Seahawks, a week number 2, and we realized a little bit later on, oh, wow, the Seahawks defense is historically terrible. And then once against the Texans in a loss against a 4-12 Houston team. Yeah, definitely. You guys should run that back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, run it back. There's nothing I would love more than the Patriots to run it back with Cam Newton. There's not a scintilla of belief in my brain that happens. I would hope beyond hope it happens, because I would love to see the Patriots go 6-10, 5-11, 4-12, and watch another wretched season. But there's no way they could have watched what they watched last year. By the end of the season, had a mutual parting of the ways, and then suddenly been like, yeah, we should do that again. I mean, by the end of December, both parties agreed change was for the best. What would have changed in the last 2 months? That the Patriots are kind of like the dude at the bar that's like, nah, I could do better. No way I could do better. Nah, she's not that hot. Then the lights go on at 1:45, and they're like, oh, boy. All right. I guess let me see what I can do here with, all right, yeah. All right, I'll go with her. Is that what we're doing here, where just the Patriots fished around the bar long enough and then realized they couldn't do better, so they're just going to get back to Cam Newton? Yeah, I guess we were wrong here. I mean, you're fishing for Matthew Stafford. Big upgrade. You're fishing for Carson Wentz. I don't really like Carson Wentz, but at least he's 27 years old and doesn't have all of the wear and tear that Cam Newton does. And even he's been really injury prone. But I would trust Cam Newton. I would trust Carson Wentz, rather, over Cam Newton in New England. I mean, you're going to fish for those types of quarterbacks and then go back to Cam Newton after he threw 8 touchdowns last year? Again, I hope, but I can't believe this report. I saw this. I said, you got to be kidding me. And Cam's talking it up. I mean, I hope that Cam's just doing this for his own posturing of like, yeah, I got options. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Reunion might be cool. I might go back to New England. Now, I hope it's one of those things where it's not real because, well, I hope it's one of those things that they do get back together, but I can't imagine that these two parties do it again. Do it again. Do it again. I mean, could you imagine how awful that looked last year? Give me more. Shoot it right into my veins. Cam in 2021 with the Patriots. By the way, Patriots fans might hate me, but I know this. They agree with me. They might hate me right now, but they do not want 16 more games with Cam Newton next year. I know this. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, speaking of Carson Wentz, he wore number 11 in Philadelphia, but he won't get number 11 in Indy. We'll tell you why. And a stud Seahawks defensive player says, no hometown discount for me. We'll do that coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Welcome back, and remember that the DA show is available in podcast form. So if you want to listen to your favorite segments or want to hear something again or something you may have missed, listen to the DA show whenever you want, wherever you want, by downloading our podcast. Full episodes are available, as well as the best of the show every single day. Just search it on your favorite podcast platform. Carson Wentz was number 11 in Philadelphia. But in Indianapolis, you won't be able to wear that number because it's already been given to Michael Pittman, the Colts wide receiver. Carson reached out to Pittman, and Pittman said, yeah, nah, I'm holding on to this. Here's Michael Pittman.
I spoke to him, and he was just seeing, like, how like, locked in I was to 11, and I told him that I was locked in. And he was like, that's cool, bro, because I'm probably going to switch anyway.
Well, it feels a little bit like immediate disrespect, does it not? Now, to be fair, that audio courtesy of TMZ, Pittman said, no, he seemed like a great guy. But, yeah, that's kind of what you expect for when Carson Wentz shows up. It's like, yeah, it's nice that you want number 11, but I'm good. You're not Tom Brady. You're not Aaron Rodgers. You're not Drew Brees. Yeah, I think I'm just going to hold on to it. Now, I've always said this. If one of these quarterbacks wanted my jersey number, I'd sell it in a heartbeat. How much you want? How much you want? I mean, just to me, how badly do you want it? I can start naming prices. You guys make all this cash. I mean, for Michael Pittman, you want some of that quarterback money. You know, so get a car out of it, get 10K out of it, get something out of it, get use of one of these condos or something on the beach that these quarterbacks have. You got to squeeze them dry. I don't need number 11 that badly. Can I have the jersey number, but I need something back in return. Negotiate that bad boy. But Wentz is going to wear something else. We'll see what it is. Zero, perhaps? Here is Draymond Green. He got ejected in the game the other night against the Hornets, against Charlotte on Saturday. And here's Draymond admitting that ejection was a bad look.
I was a bit disappointed. I'm still a bit disappointed in myself because, you know, I think that whole situation bothered me. I know for sure it did. It bothered me more than being suspended from game 5 of the NBA Finals in 2016.
So there was a tie-up, jump ball. He wasn't happy. Led to a Hornets victory and Draymond started arguing with officials and got assessed the two T's, then gets ejected. And all you need to know about this is that after the game, Steve Kerr said, look, he crossed the line. We like his passion, we like his energy, but when he gets ejected, then he crossed the line. And that doesn't give him, his passion, energy, doesn't give him the license to cross that line, and he knows that. Once his coach didn't jump to his defense, Draymond really had no defense. He's a fiery guy. This has happened before, obviously. He's a loose cannon at times, and late in the game, his ejection leads to directly a victory for the other team. And Kerr knows that. Kerr said it. And look, it was a bad look for him. It feels like Draymond does this a lot. You know, the Warriors are better this year, much better because of Steph Curry. That's it. And last year we saw what would happen when it's just Draymond trying to carry the water. They stink. You know, so he is along for the ride. And, okay, sure, there's a fire that helps. But he's really just a passenger these days. And if he gets kicked out of a game, then he's worth nothing to them. So that's the line that he can't cross. And here is Seahawks linebacker K.J. Wright, who joined Jim Rome yesterday right here on CBS Sports Radio. And in terms of negotiations, yeah, the Seahawks aren't going to get any type of discount.
No, man, I do way too much on the football field to take a discount. That makes absolutely no sense. Like, if you want to, you know, win all these championships and, you know, look good on Sundays, you got to compensate your guys that are making plays. And like you said earlier, nobody, you know, had double-digit TFLs and PBUs in the NFL. So I have a family, and I'm trying to, you know, set up long-term success for my family.
So this is going to be very interesting, because do the Seahawks have the cap space to do this? You know, for K.J. Wright and for that defense, he's a crucial part of them at least being a semblance of decent. And last year, early in the season, they were awful. And last season, by the end of it, they had gotten better, but their opponents had gotten so much worse. So the Seahawks can't really afford to be losing guys as good as K.J. Wright. But you need a little give and take, because they don't have a lot of cap space. So a murky situation there. You have the Russell Wilson situation also that's been kind of not headed in the right direction for the Seahawks. You had them fire their offensive coordinator. The Seahawks situation right now feels very melodramatic. And it's kind of amazing that this is kind of been a staple of Seattle for all of the years since they lost that Super Bowl. And really, you could even include when they won the Super Bowl the year early in 2013. But it has felt like there's more drama in Seattle than any other team in many ways. You had, of course, the end of the Super Bowl that they lost, in which they didn't hand off to Marshawn Lynch, and the Malcolm Butler interception. That immediately throws everything into a washing machine, because then it seems like the defense doesn't trust the play calling, and then the fans of the media are all out to get the play calling and the decision making. From there, it was Russell Wilson was protected by the coaching staff and wasn't given the tough love for throwing that interception. Richard Sherman got PO'd and he ends up leaving. They don't want to pay Richard Sherman. And Cam Chancellor is injured and he has to retire. And Earl Thomas gives the finger to Pete Carroll. They don't retain him. They give all of the money, obviously, to Russell Wilson. Marshawn Lynch is allowed to leave as well. And now fast forward, they haven't ever gotten back to an NFC Championship game, and pieces continue to be stripped away. And now it's Russell Wilson wants more control and doesn't want to be sacked as much, and K.J. Wright won't take a hometown discount. And it's kind of been never-ending in Seattle. So when this straightens out, who knows? But not a great offseason to this point in time for the Seattle Seahawks. And that is your sound check. Yesterday, Randy Mueller joined us here on the show, former NFL executive, and he's been a GM around the game for quite some time. And I was talking to him about the two quarterbacks at the top of the draft, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson from BYU. Now, I'll be honest, when he first started talking about Wilson, he starts saying that Wilson's more NFL ready. And I thought I had either misheard him or I thought that he had gotten the two names mixed up, kind of like I call Zach Wilson Luke Wilson. But in fact, what you hear is what Randy Mueller means to say, that he thinks the BYU quarterback is better suited right now for the NFL than Trevor Lawrence. Here's Mueller.
I do think that Zach Wilson is ready-made to come in and play sooner. I think the learning curve will be shorter for him because of the offense and the scheme and his skill set. He has an NFL arm. He has NFL skills to make all the throws, both in the pocket and out of the pocket. But the thing that kind of separates him really from even Lawrence is the intangibles, the instincts in the pocket, the anticipation that he shows when he's throwing before receivers are even open. He's throwing them open, things that are really hard to teach. I think Trevor Lawrence has the most upside because he's 6'5", 240 pounds or whatever, and he has all the physical traits like a Herbert with the Chargers. He's very similar to that, but he's going to take a little learning curve coming out of Clemson, and I think people see Zach Wilson as not having the same learning curve. He's going to be ready to roll.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I had to follow up with Randy Mueller. I'm like, wow, you got to delve more into this, that you actually think that Trevor Lawrence has a steeper learning curve in the NFL. Look, with all due respect, I completely disagree. Having watched Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, to me, it's a no-brainer that Trevor Lawrence is ready to go from day one and Zach Wilson's more of the project. I think, okay, they run some RPO with Clemson. Yeah, he would do that less. But, I mean, to me, Trevor Lawrence is Justin Herbert, but better. He's a better version. He is broad and strong with a howitzer arm. He's very mobile. He can take the hits. He can stand tall in the pocket. He can make plays with his legs. He has played at a really high level in a power conference. He has obviously played against the very best defenses in championship games of the playoffs. I don't see how you can look at Zach Wilson, who had one good year last year, one, and compare it against three great seasons at Clemson, and say that Trevor Lawrence, it's going to be a longer learning curve for him to become an NFL quarterback. I just don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see any part about that. Not to mention the off-the-field stuff, which I'm not saying that Zach Wilson's a bad guy, but there has been, from talent evaluators, a question about Zach Wilson's leadership and Zach Wilson's maturity. For whatever it's worth, Zach comes from some serious wealth. His uncle is the founder of JetBlue. And, you know, there's always been a sense that does he really love football, or is he kind of like a Josh Rosen where you kind of take it or leave it? And, you know, when you look at Trevor Lawrence, the kid stepped in as a true freshman and was basically the best player in college football and never took a dive after that. I just don't see how any of this could have changed over the last 3 years. When Trevor Lawrence took over the Tigers as the starting quarterback, he immediately led them to a dominant national championship season. Immediately. And in the college football national championship game against none other than Alabama, in which he won 44-16 against Nick Saban's defense. Okay, so Lawrence outdueled Nick Saban's defense in a rout. Since that moment in time, he was the offensive MVP of the playoff of the national championship. And everybody said from this point on, he would be the first pick of the NFL draft at any point that the draft was held. He would have been the first pick of the NFL draft the day after that national championship game. And would have been, had the draft been held any day since, over the last 2 years, two plus years now, 25 months or so. What changed? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, since that moment, has gone 23-2. His two losses in the playoffs, one to LSU in the national championship game against one of the greatest teams that we've seen in recent memory, the Tigers last year, 2 years ago now, and this past January against an Ohio State team where Justin Fields was on fire. Since he won a national championship, so this is not including his ridiculous true freshman year, he's thrown 7,000 yards, run for another 800, has had 77 combined touchdowns, air and ground, against 13 interceptions. He has thrown for 60 touchdowns and run for another 17 and thrown for 13 picks. I just don't see how anybody can put Zach Wilson in that conversation. Zach had a really good year this past year, but he's not Trevor Lawrence. And the debates over Lawrence versus Zach Wilson are going to seem totally insane in hindsight. I really believe this. Insane. And I'm not saying that Wilson can't have a good career, but you're going to see Trevor Lawrence step in and immediately do things on the football field to help his team win. Immediately look like an NFL quarterback. And Wilson's not going to immediately look that way. And I don't know where this stuff is coming from. I just find it to be off the reservation. I mean, when you also look at the history of the top two quarterbacks that go in a draft, and I wrote a column about this for CBS Sports. You have 93, Bledsoe versus Rick Meyer. Obvious choice in retrospect. In 98, Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf, the most famous example. Obvious in retrospect. In 99, you had Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith. Obvious who was the best in that class. In 2012, Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin. Obvious who was the best in that class. These are all drafts where quarterbacks went 1 and 2 or 1, 2, and 3. So there was some debate at the top of who you would take first and second. And then I'm not doing the recent drafts because there's still the rest of the careers for the guys like Goff and Carson Wentz, et cetera, to play out. But when you look at these drafts in retrospect, it is so obvious there was one head and shoulders above everybody else. And they normally got taken first, except for the 2000 to the 99 draft where Couch went 1, McNabb went 2, and Akili went 3. It's going to seem insane 10 years from now to say anybody ever had Wilson rated over Trevor Lawrence. And as I've said, I think there might be just some bluster around here. There might be some poker playing where teams want Trevor Lawrence to perhaps slip a slot to 2 or want somebody to start thinking that Zach Wilson's the hot commodity, so they need to trade up to grab him. But you can't convince me that Wilson's going to be a better NFL quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. You can check out my piece at CBSSportsRadio.com. It's on the front page right now, CBSSportsRadio.com. So yesterday, Carson Wentz is now all happy he's a Colt. And I get it. I totally understand why he's happy. I think that anybody could look at the Colts and say that's a better roster than the Eagles. And it's a kinder, gentler sports town than Philadelphia. And if you are Carson Wentz and you're looking for a reboot, going to Frank Reich is a really appetizing, enticing option. So I get all of that. We had Dan Dockich yesterday on the show. He was wonderful. He's a sports talk host in Indianapolis. You know, and he said, look, everybody here just kind of happy that the Colts are competitive. So there's not going to be a lot of angry media or fans banging down the door of Frank Reich or Carson Wentz if this thing doesn't work to a T compared to Philadelphia, where it is DEFCON 4 every single day. But let's be perfectly clear. Carson Wentz demanded a trade. And Wentz's agent said yesterday that they never demanded a trade, that they told the Eagles that a fresh start would be good for both, but that Carson Wentz was willing to come back since he was under contract this fall and compete for the job with Jalen Hurts and whomever. I mean, what a lie. What type of spin doctoring is that? Carson Wentz didn't demand a trade. I mean, does Team Wentz think that we're just all total bozos? Like, you open up our ears and the brains just pour out? Carson Wentz, when he was finally benched for Jalen Hurts at the end of last regular season for that Green Bay game, immediately voiced his displeasure, and Adam Schefter immediately reported that Carson Wentz doesn't want to play in Philadelphia anymore. Remember, that was the first report out of Schefter the next day. Wentz isn't happy. Wentz wants to go somewhere else. Remember week 17 when the Eagles got all in that hot water for playing Nate Sudfeld and the loss where they were kind of punting against Washington, allowing Washington to win the division? Remember how Carson Wentz wasn't even active for that game? Remember that? That in week 17, the Eagles had essentially made him a healthy scratch. How can Carson Wentz's crew lie and act as though it wasn't a trade demand? It's so laughable. Wentz was not going to be a good soldier and come back and compete for the job. That's why they traded him. And that's the sad part here. Okay, that's the sad part. And this, Wentz gets a fresh start. It works for Wentz. Maybe he'll be good again. We'll see. But this is where I lose a lot of respect for Carson Wentz, okay? Wentz pouted. Wentz was unhappy. Wentz wanted out. And then gets his way because he didn't want to go anywhere else but Indianapolis. So the Eagles have to take 50 cents on the dollar because there is no real trade value by going other places. There's no bidding war. And then Wentz has the gall to say through his agent, well, we never demanded a trade. We would have been happy coming back to Philadelphia and competing for a job. Like hell you would have been. That's why they traded you. And I'm not here to defend Howie Roseman, okay? Because Roseman's roster has plenty to be desired. Roseman gave him, well, traded all the picks for him and then gave him all of the money and then had to trade him for a second round pick and a third round pick, okay? So give me a break. You think Howie Roseman, if he felt it was an option to bring back Carson Wentz, would have done that instead of eating a second and a third and some guaranteed money for Carson Wentz just to get him out of town? Of course not. Like hell you would have been happy coming back competing for a job. That is insane. That's obscene to even say. And I'm more annoyed than ever about how this went down. If you believe you got to get out and you can steer your way to a better situation for your career, look, that's your prerogative. You were under contract, but fine. That's your prerogative. Like Carson Wentz, if I felt I was being left to die at my workplace and I could get to a place that was far more successful and give me a better chance to succeed, then you know what? I'm sure I would want to get there as well. I'm not sure I would use the same tactics that he did, basically quitting on his team, but I think we could all understand that. What I don't want to hear is Carson Wentz acting like, no, I would have been happy going back. We never demanded a trade. This is just the way that it came out in the wash. Wrong. That is wrong. The Eagles did not want to have to trade a guy that they would have to eat dead money on for a second and third round pick. I know the two can become a one, but there's no guarantee it's a one. Carson Wentz is injury prone. If Carson Wentz gets injured, guess what? It's a second round draft pick. If Carson Wentz stinks, which he did last year, the Colts could start Jacoby Brissett if they wanted to. And then you're not getting that first round draft pick. So don't tell me that the Eagles or anybody in Philadelphia, that the Eagles just wanted to trade Carson Wentz and Wentz would have been happy coming back. They knew it was a rotten situation. They had, by the way, they had fired Doug Peterson. So Wentz didn't even have the guy that he hates the most of the franchise around anymore, and they still felt like they had to trade him to get a 2 and a 3 to eat dead money. I mean, give me a break. You know, this is where Carson Wentz again loses me, is that he doesn't want to be the bad guy, but is willing to do bad guy things. You want, if you need to get out of there, fine. Don't lie about it. Be the bad guy then. You want to be the bad guy? Fine, you're the bad guy. Don't lie that, no, I was actually a really good guy. I would have come back and compete. No, give me a break. Liar.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday. My favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, get me Rubinoff. Have your hand on the button ready to go as our trashes are ready to roll. We start with Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, who are you trashing?
DA, I have definitely trashed this before, but I'm doing it again because it's still a problem. Some dude, I believe his name is George in Manhattan, has my cell phone number attached to his Grubhub account. Now, it's not an issue of my account is compromised, I am not getting charged for any of this, but somehow along the way, my cell phone number is on this guy's account. It happened months ago, a couple times in a row. I called, I thought it was fixed, didn't happen, and now twice in the last 10 days, out of nowhere, I get the automated text, blah, 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 has received your order, it'll be ready soon, your order is done, it's been picked up, it's on the way. Friday night, I got a text from the driver saying, I'm here, come down and get your food.
Oh, no.
When I call Grubhub, their solution is, we have to ask him to take your number off his account. Why can't they just delete it so this stops happening? But no, I've got to wait for George in Manhattan to listen to this email from Grubhub and maybe go back and delete my phone so I stop knowing what he got from Safari Restaurant last Friday night. Trash them all.
Warm, sizzling garbage.
So George in Manhattan never knows when his order is ready or the DoorDash guy is downstairs.
Yeah, I think the big thing is if he doesn't have a doorbell, he's screwed. Now, he can look on his app, I guess, and see the progression of his order, but he's not getting the automated text nor the, hey, I'm here, come get your food message. And I've even gotten phone calls from the delivery guy being like, come down and get this.
Yeah.
One time the restaurant called me and said, we don't have so-and-so. What can we put in your order instead? So this guy has missed out on important information. So it does behoove him to get the right cell phone number on this account, but he won't do it.
Well, you should screw with Georgia Manhattan. When they call and they say, you know, we don't have the chicken Caesar. What else would you like? You know, you just order something totally crazy, totally off the board. You know what? Add this to the order. Add this to the order. I want extra anchovies on top of this. I want something really crazy. Put peanut butter and jelly on my pizza. Something like that to really screw with George because he's putting you out. You know, he's making your life worse. So I'd like you to do that. Number two, do you ever get the update of George in Manhattan's order and be like, yeah, you know what? I'd like that. That actually inspires me to eat something or order something from DoorDash.
No, that hasn't happened yet. But your first idea is a good one because I might have to do something relatively drastic to get this fixed because I don't. And again, I'm not getting charged for this. So it's not a bad thing. It's just an annoyance. But I want it to stop. And I find Grubhub's response unacceptable. So I might need to like call and cancel the order so George doesn't get it. So he learns his lesson to just get my, I'm like, maybe we have like this almost the same cell number, like maybe numbers are flipped or whatever. So it's a quick fix that he needs to do so I get out of his ordering life.
When you get your next Georgia Manhattan order, you should call up the restaurant and say, okay, add to that 10 pies. I need 10 pizzas here. Okay, add to that. Suddenly he's got 10 pies. He'll be like, how did this happen? Well, you called up and then you screw Georgia Manhattan. He's got, you know, pies for the next 2 months. Maybe Connor can come over and eat one of them. And then you hopefully...
Maybe it is Connor, by the way, period. Maybe Connor is George in Manhattan. I'm funding his pizza life.
Get me Rubinoff. Sam Rubinoff on the board today, one of the Diaper D aliens. Sam, who are you trashing?
DA, I have had enough of this 2-3 zone that Syracuse plays. Either put your hand up on the guy shooting the wide open three or rebound the basketball. Last night, they didn't do either one. They gave up 52 points in the first half, and game was over, and pretty much the season was over at that point. So I'm done with this 2-3 zone. Get it out of here. I'm trashing Jim Boeheim and sticking with that zone.
Get him out.
This must be garbage time.
Fear not. Jim is very young and flexible. He likes to adjust to, you know, what's thrown at him. He's not set in his ways at all. So I think, you know, I'm sure he'll see the error of his ways and maybe next year. You know, he's got a long career to go. Jim will make that adjustment. Sam Rubinoff complaining about the 2-3 zone is like the 40th year that Syracuse fans or alumni argue and, you know, hate the 2-3 zone. Like, we've been doing this. You know, I was in school in the late 90s, early 2000s, and we were like, is the 2-3 zone over yet? I mean, he's been doing this for 25 years now. That was 20 years ago. He'd been there 40 years, and we're still going like, is this over yet? When is this actually wrapping? Are we wrapping this thing up here, Jim? When is it going to be over? You good yet? So we'll talk more bracketology, though, with John Rothstein coming up here on the show in hour number 4. On Sunday, I don't know about you, Bogues, but the snow has started to really break my will here because it feels like it snows just about every other day, and I'm shoveling, and we got to get the plow guy around here, and I'm on the ATV trying to push things around, and the whole thing is just a nightmare. Every day it's something else, and we still got a week left in February, so it's not like the snow is definitely out of our radar. So on Sunday, I'm like, you know what? Actually, Saturday. I said, I'm going to treat the snow like I'm having fun with it. That way I'm flipping the relationship. And
have fun with your snow.
Have fun with your snow. With the 17th straight week of snow. So I said, I'm going to go get a snow tube. Now I'm going to go sleigh ride. I'm going to go sledding. And of course, the Bourbonville is like, you're going to do what? You're 41 years old. We got no kids. What are you going to do? And I'm like, no, you know what? I'm flipping this. I'm going to have a few beers and I'm going to go out and I'm going to sleigh ride. Okay. Maybe not the smartest thing in the world for young people, but I'm, you know, just to take the edge off. Okay. So I go out, I go to Target, and they're like, oh, we've been sold out of sleds forever. I'm like, okay,
yep.
Great. So I'm shopping for, you know, snow tubes or sleds in the final week of February. So I'm toast anyway. So anyway, they got a pool toy, okay? They got a pool inflatable donut. And I'm like, all right, this will work. I only need it for like a day. It's $5. If I get 5 runs out of it, fine. Bring it home, and I'm like, great. Runs in, have a little bit of fun. That'll be great. You know, get a little exercise anyway. Climb up the hill, go back down. Should be fun. Go back to your roots. I start trying to blow this thing up. It is impossible. I would need an iron lung assisting me. It is impossible. I am sitting on the couch in our living room trying to blow up a pool toy in February to go sledding for 20 minutes. My wife comes out of the basement. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm still blowing up this thing. She goes, I can hear you downstairs. Are you like choking to death? It also smells toxic. What is going on? I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I've blown up, you know, tubes forever. I can't do this one. I don't know if I got a defective one or maybe these days they're all used for pumps. I couldn't figure that part out either. I got an air compressor. I couldn't get the nozzle in there. The whole thing was a nightmare. It took me a half hour to blow up this thing. And by the end of it, I'm totally exhausted. I don't even have any energy to go out and sled anyway. So how would they're making these pool toys and how would they're making inflatables? That, to me, come on here, help us out. I'm not a smoker. I'm in good shape, and I still can't blow up the pool toy / snow toy. Get it out.
Let's face it, that's straight trash.
Folks, have you? I don't know how you're doing this with kids blowing up all their stuff in like the pool and in the yard. I mean, it must be brutal.
So first of all, you are living a parallel life to my wife right now because we have been dealing with this black market sled issue for the entire winter, basically. You can't get one. And like when you're like, we, the first big snow was at early January, we were out on a hill and like our thing broke and we're like, what are we gonna do now? You cannot find one of these things anywhere. You can't. Nope. Online, in store, they are just gone. I don't know if factories have been hit hard by COVID or they're just like, listen, we're making something else, not sleds, but you can't get a sled anywhere. And my wife was in Target and saw the same, like, oh, it's almost summer display, get your pool toys. And I was like, maybe I'll buy one of these, but then realized then we run the risk of, hopefully winter's almost over, so we'll be okay, which means it'll be still snowing in April. Yeah. But yeah, blowing these things up. Now, some of them, I don't know if this is your problem, but they have, you almost have to like bite the nozzle, like to break a seal to get the air in. I think it's designed to prevent the air from coming back out after you blow some in. But that adds a whole other level of skill to this operation that I also do not have.
Yeah.
And then you need, like, my little foot pump then sometimes doesn't get in enough to, like, puncture this safety membrane thing. And you're right. You got nothing. You're dead in the water.
That's exactly what happened. I couldn't blow directly into it because the air wasn't going to go in because it had one of those trap doors, I guess, to not allow it to come back out. So I had to bite down to create a crease enough to get it in. But, I mean, it's going, like, little by little by little. I exhausted myself, and it was less than a quarter of the way filled up. I then punched that little nozzle, little nipple in, and that seemed to help out a little bit. But, again, there's something happened with the new technology where it doesn't allow the air to come out, but it also makes it impossible to blow it up as well. Unlike our old blow-up toys when we were growing up, you know, it was just like, air is going to come out, but you just grab it with your finger and your index finger, your thumb and your index finger to make sure it doesn't come out when you have to take another breath. But these days, you know, it's trying to prevent that, I guess, but it was brutal.
Or and you have emphysema. That maybe you need to go see a doctor. Maybe you have no lung capacity.
I could be Jody Mack at this point with black lung. You know,
Jody can do it in 2 seconds, by the way. It took you 2 hours. One breath for Jody.
I got, I think, 8 or 9 runs out of it, and then the thing split. So if you were hoping for more than that from the pool toy, if Katie's going out to buy this thing, it's going to get you about 8 runs or so. And that was probably a lucky 8. It's probably going to split within 5 if you had you had some real action there. So, Trash Tuesday, send us your trashes on Twitter. Mike tweets, beam me up, DA. I'm trashing the parents and coach of the kid that disrespected Cam Newton. Before anybody else, this is an indictment of how parents befriend their kids too much. You disrespectful delinquent. Hashtag straight trash, bro.
Overflowing landfill.
The kid that was chirping at Cam Newton at his own camp this weekend. Jeffrey tweets, I'm trashing old man winter. I am done with this bleeping snow. Hashtag trash Tuesday.
That's garbage, and we're not talking about the band.
Dixie Landan tweets, I'm trashing a neighbor during snowpocalypse down here. I was using my tractor to clear some snow from driveways of the neighborhood, and this guy comes out screaming, telling me to get out of his driveway. I hope you slide off into a ditch on your slicker than owl snot driveway. Trash him.
Total wasteoid.
Slicker than owl snot. Now that's slick. Steve tweets. For Dixieland Dan, it is. He's got some good countryism. Slicker than owl snot. Steve tweets, I'm trashing the Mariners ex-president for everything he said, but more for thinking a Zoom video was private in today's world. Really? Please trash this dumbass. Bring on the Kraken already.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Brett in Boise tweets, I want to trash all the Trevor Lawrence doubters. Didn't we learn enough from Remember the Titans? QBs with long hair will always prevail. Hashtag sunshine.
I smell rotten eggs.
Joining us is college basketball's hungriest insider for CBS Sports, our friend John Rothstein. John, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Great to be with you on the inaugural edition of your show.
Haven't talked to you in a while, man. How you been?
You know, DA, we're like Stallone and Rambo 2. We're day by day.
No tournament last year must have been killer for you. How'd you handle a March without a tournament?
First night went to Bar Coastal, Kerry-style wings, waffle fries. Woke up the next day, you know, processed my preseason top 45 for next year. And then I realized there was going to be about 3 weeks left in March with no basketball. It kind of felt like the alternate 1985 and Back to the Future 2 when Biff was running Hill Valley.
Did you find the almanac?
Unfortunately, I did not, because it would have cured a lot of things, because then I would have had the results of the tournament that never happened.
All right, so I think a lot of our listeners, they don't know who's good and who's not. I think that because of the year off last year and because some of the traditional powerhouses aren't that good, they need some guidance. So can you help us? I'm just going to give you teams, and you tell us if they're contenders or pretenders, if they're good or they're just flat not good. Is that okay?
You got it.
Okay, let's start with the top tier teams. Gonzaga.
you know, obviously I think the favorite to win the national championship.
What about Baylor?
1A.
You think those two teams are by far the best in the country?
I think Michigan is in that top tier as well.
Ohio State.
Very, very good. Still on track to be a one seed.
Iowa.
Probably in the 2-3 range. Outstanding offensively. Probably a little bit underrated, considering they haven't been the best defensive team. You know, everybody wants to talk about what they don't have. I think more people need to talk about what they do have.
Alabama.
Explosive offensively, vastly improved defensively. You know, one of the great defensive stories that I can remember covering in all my years covering college basketball, they gave up over 80 points a game in SEC play a year ago. Now they're in a situation where they're one of the top teams in defensive efficiency nationally. Alabama's an explosive offensive team. The one thing I'm just holding a little bit of reservation for is this has been a very watered-down year in the SEC, and Alabama's best non-conference win right now is a neutral site win over Stanford. So capable of being a second weekend team. Beyond that, I'm not so sure yet.
How did Nate Oates do this at Alabama?
Well, I think Nate deserves credit for being obviously a great offensive coach. He was one at Buffalo, but this has all been, I think, a byproduct of a bigger commitment defensively. You know, if you remember last year, Kyra Lewis, who was obviously one of the top point guards in last year's NBA draft, was on their roster, and they still, you know, could not be 500 in the SEC. But with obviously some good recruiting, with the, obviously a great year from Herb Jones, and, you know, I think really a style that has been very, very difficult for a lot of people to figure, and the improved commitment to defense, which has been the big difference, you know, more of a focus on, from what other SEC coaches tell me, of, you know, getting in the gaps, taking away what other teams do well. He has went from being an anemic offensive team to, you know, one of the best defensive teams in the country.
John Rothstein, College Basketball Insider, CBS Sports, joins us this morning on the show. Let's talk Blue Bloods here. What about Kansas?
Kind of in a different type of situation, DA, because every single year, you know, the conversation revolves around Kansas as we're getting closer to March is, are they going to win the Big 12 regular season title? And, you know, obviously, are they going to go to a Final Four and have a chance to win the national championship? It's complete opposite this time of year. And I think it could be the type of season where if you're Bill Self, in a lot of ways, you're going to the NCAA tournament playing with a little bit of house money because nobody expects you to go far anyway.
It's an interesting, flip of the roles for Bill Self and company. What about Duke and Jalen Johnson? Are they better without him?
Well, they're definitely better without him. And, you know, I had talked about this, you know, at length last week, like a lot of people did, so I'm not going to go into it again as well. But you look at their team now, and one of the things that's changed in Johnson's absence, and they haven't lost the game without Johnson in the lineup, is it's opened up an opportunity for Mark Williams to play more alongside Matthew Hurt. Mark Williams last night against Syracuse had his best game of the year at 18 points and 11 rebounds. But one of the things that Mark Williams has done for Duke is he has allowed better spacing on the floor for Matthew Hurt at the stretch four spot. And look, I know that Matthew Hurt wasn't probably in his most proficient form last night. He had a solid game, even a spectacular game. But the three games prior, Matthew Hurt was playing like one of the best players in the ACC. A big reason for that was because he is better served playing with somebody who can open up the floor for him. Mark Williams does that, and Duke right now, again, similar to Kansas, is in a complete twist of roles because they're trending upward in an underdog type of role. It's really kind of like the Bizarro episode of Seinfeld.
You're the best. So we're going to see a March Madness with Duke in it?
If I was a betting man, and to quote Jim Fossil, the longtime coach of the Giants about 20 years ago, when he said this is a poker game, I'm shoving my chips into the middle of the table, I would believe right now that Duke will play well enough down the stretch to be in the NCAA tournament on Selection Sunday, which is just 19 days away, not that anybody's counting.
Last year, UNC was an absolute train wreck. This year, they're the fourth best team of the ACC. How'd Roy do it?
Well, this still is not a vintage North Carolina team by any stretch of the imagination. But
the backbone of Roy Williams' teams over the years, in addition to having elite point guard play, which he doesn't have, you know, on this year's team. He has very good point guard play at times, but he has two freshmen, and R.J. Davis and Caleb Love, is just a relentless approach on the backboard. I mean, you think back to the team that won the championship in 2017, and it had Isaiah Hicks and Kennedy Meeks and Tony Bradley and guys like that up front. This team has De'Ron Sharpe, Garrison Brooks, Armando Bacot. So they're in a situation where they, for all intents and purposes, have been ruthless on the backboards. And again, I know we're seeing a little bit of a theme here, but North Carolina is going to go into the NCAA tournament with a little bit of house money. And I've said this time and time again, the door has never been more open for non-blue blood programs who have never been to a Final Four, you know, or obviously have never won a national championship, to make their run. And that is why you look at, obviously, teams like Gonzaga or Illinois or Iowa, or, you know, teams of that nature, you know, that have an opportunity, or Alabama, Florida State, even though Florida State's been very good the last 5 years under Leonard Hamilton. The door has never been more open for a team with that kind of ilk, a non-blue blood, to make a run and go to the Final Four.
Kentucky is 8-13 overall, 7-7, middle of the pack of the SEC. What has happened to John Calipari's program?
Well, I think what we're seeing more and more in college basketball, and Gonzaga and Baylor are perfect examples of that. Player retention and retaining your own personnel has become the key to winning at a high level in college basketball. In last week's AP Top 25, among the top 10 teams in the rankings, 40 of the 50 starters on those 10 teams were in their programs the season prior. That is a sign of player retention. That is a sign, again, of making sure that bringing back your own personnel is vastly more important than what you bring in. And I think if you look at the teams at the top of college basketball right now, everybody at the top has had a strong sense of player retention. I mean, Michigan, I know, has added a couple of transfers, but Eli Brooks, Franz Wagner, Isaiah Livers, you know, those guys were all obviously in the program a year ago, and, you know, there's something to be said for that.
The Big Ten has the number 3, number 5, number 4, 3, 5, 9. I'm getting those all mixed up. But, what, 4 in the top 10. The Big 12 also has a number of elite teams at the top of it as well. Better conference, Big 12 or Big 10?
Big 10 is deeper. There's more teams. But I firmly believe this, and I was talking to Mike Boynton, the head coach of Oklahoma State, this morning, who obviously had a great win last night over Texas Tech. You know, you could make a case, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but the other six teams in the Big 12, aside from Baylor, Texas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Kansas, Oklahoma State, could all go to a Sweet 16. They're all good enough to win two games in the NCAA tournament. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, but it could obviously develop with the right draw for all seven of those teams. I look at the situation in the Big Ten, and I see four teams, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, and also Illinois, that are all good enough to get to a Final Four. After that, I think I would be surprised if any other teams in the Big Ten's in the second weekend.
Give me a sneaky, good, mid-major, non-power conference team to keep an eye out for in March.
How long is your program again?
You got like 47 minutes or so.
Well, I mean, I look at mid-major differently. Like, I don't consider the Mountain West or the Atlantic 10 to be your vintage mid-major, so to speak, because, you know, they obviously have high major transfers and things like that. But, you know, Loyola Chicago is an elite defensive team, a better defensive team than the one that went to a Final Four in 2018. Western Kentucky has an All-American caliber big man in Charles Bassey, and Western Kentucky has already won a road game at Alabama. They're also going to get another chance to earn a big victory on Thursday night against Alabama. Boise State and San Diego State out of the Mountain West will meet this week in what I think is one of the great off-the-radar games on the schedule. You know, if you don't really make appointment television to watch that, you officially hate fun. And then I think if you look at, you know, a team that is in Gonzaga's conference but is underrated nationally probably because of the greatness of Gonzaga, is BYU. The Cougars trending towards
their second NCAA tournament berth in a row, or at least being in position to qualify for the second year in a row under Mark Pope. So it's a fascinating, fascinating dynamic as we wait and see obviously what transpires between now and Selection Sunday, which is, again, just 19 days away. Not that anybody's counting.
No, of course not. We have a close relationship with the Winthrop Eagles program here on the show. We have a member of the show, Dave Friedman, who's the voice of the Winthrop Eagles, and so we follow them quite closely here on the show from our listener standpoint and our standpoint. They are 17-1 in the Big South. They are 20-1 overall. Could Winthrop be a sneaky, interesting team in the tournament?
Absolutely, because they play so many guys. I mean, it's kind of like run almost like a hockey team with how they shuffle people in and out. And, you know, Winthrop has a player that could really flourish and become a star in the round of 64 if the Eagles were to win a game. In 6'7", you know, guard, you know, Chandler Vaudrin, he reminds me a lot of the team that the guy who starred on the team that Brad Underwood had in 2016 at Stephen F. Austin, Thomas Walkup, somebody who, you know, can just do a little bit of everything at his size. He can pass, he can dribble, he can shoot. So if you're looking, obviously, to double down on Winthrop, the name you need to become familiar with is Chandler Vaudrin.
Love it. Hey, before I let you go, tell me about how this is going to set up. Will you be in Indianapolis jumping from site to site? What's the media situation going to be like for fans, et cetera, at the NCAA tournament? Everything's going to be in Indy.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you know, our studio is always here in New York, and, you know, we'll have studio shows on CBS Sports Network every day. So I am just going to be prepared. You know, we have a lot of time to fill. If we got to talk about Winthrop, Colgate, or Drake, or UC Santa Barbara's done a great job. They've won 12 in a row. You know, I'll just be prepared to go on and talk, and wherever they send me, they send me. The mission, obviously, is Operation March. There's 6 weeks left. I'm already obviously combing through my top 45 for next season. And remember, it's not anarchy. It's just college basketball.
I love having you on the show, so I want to also give you a pop on the T-shirts. You do a ton of amazing college basketball T-shirts as well. So tell me about this and tell our listeners about this.
Well, it's just something, DA, really, that I'm not directly involved with. Just a little bit before last season, an outside marketing company reached out to me and said, you know, you have these one-liners that seem to get a reaction from fans when their team wins or sayings, you know, I think we can do something, you know, from a merchandise perspective. So I was obviously excited about the potential for the project. And I want to just also point out that, you know, a portion of the proceeds I wanted to make sure went to a good charity when I started this venture. And, you know, I'm proud to say that, you know, we've partnered with a great charity, Mission Continues, which is a charity that focuses on, you know, providing, you know, the appropriate type of relief and obviously help for our veterans when they come home from war. So that's something I'm really excited to be a part of here as obviously that venture continues.
Very cool. I think my favorite is Death Taxes Matt Painter. I think that's my favorite T-shirt.
And it used to be Death Taxes Bo Ryan, but, you know, I started to say, like, I think One Night in Studio, because, like, Purdue kept replenishing their talent and being at the top of the Big Ten. I was like, you know, in a lot of ways, Matt Painter has become the new Bo Ryan. And I was like, wait a minute.
Follow John on Twitter, at John Rothstein. Follow him on Instagram as well, at John.Rothstein. He's such a cool follow. He's such a great guy to have here on the show to educate us in college hoops, man. It is good to hear your voice again, bud. Enjoy those wings and waffle fries over at Bar Coastal. Hopefully I can hang out with you again, and we'll talk to you again, hopefully, closer to the tournament.
We sleep in May.
Okay, thanks. John Rothstein. We sleep in May. That's what he says. Instead of goodbye, thanks for having me on the show. Good to talk to you as well, DA. We sleep in May. Lonnie tweets, happy Trash Tuesday, DA. I'm trashing Arnold Bogus. During that last update, he said Russell Wilson helped beat the Lakers. Even the great ones slip up sometimes, but we still love you. That was Russell Westbrook. Okay, Trash Arnold Bogus today.
So frustrating.
A friend of Beef Pilati. Arnold Bogus.
I even typed it, not just said it. I typed Russell Wilson.
That's even better. Jay tweets, I'm trashing Schwartz for attempting to tell ESPN how to do their job in one of his latest tweets. Hashtag Marshmallow Mraz. Hashtag Goodenburgers. Trash Schwartz.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
Schwartz tweeted, memo to ESPN, the Islanders no longer play in Brooklyn. They play at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. Next season, they will move to the new arena, also on Long Island. Please make a note of this. Because in the app, for ESPN, the app's little box score of the Islanders and Sabres game, at the very bottom, game information, it has the game line, it has the linesmen, it has the referees, it has the capacity of the arena, and it happens to say Brooklyn, New York. This, the greatest thing, the most humanitarian thing the Mraz family ever did was allowing this bozo to the block party. I mean, Schwartz is a walking disaster. Imagine saying you don't care about the football in the Super Bowl, but you do care enough about the bottom line, the lowest line of a meaningless February hockey box score that happens to have the wrong site for the game that was the right site a year ago. I mean, imagine caring that much about that minutia that the ESPN app doesn't say Nassau Coliseum, instead says Brooklyn. Doesn't say Hempstead, says Brooklyn. Imagine caring about that, but not caring about Brady versus Mahomes. Imagine. This is what we got with Schwartz. I mean, honestly, the greatest charity that the Mraz clan ever did was extend an invite to this bozo to the block party. I can't believe it. Trash Schwartz again. Thanks for bringing that to my attention, Jay.
This must be garbage time.
Mac and Bear tweets, morning, DA. Trash the guy that was speeding down Route 83 in Maryland. Hey, fool, slow down. It's icy out there. Trash Tuesday.
Are those maggots?
Knockout Neil. I'm trashing Pepto-Bismol. Why do they go falsetto when they sing diarrhea? It's gross. You can't class that up. Just ask Dave Chappelle. Trash him.
I smell rotten eggs.
Okay, so I got a non-sports story for you, Bogues. Before we get to the non-sports, stun to a news. Okay, you ready for this?
I'm listening.
Did you see today, this is trending on Twitter, that El Chapo's wife got arrested on U.S. drug charges?
I saw the headline. I did not click on it to read the story.
Okay, so Mexican drug kingpin El Chapo obviously has been incarcerated a couple of times, escaped from Mexican jail a couple of times. People said you can't hold this guy down. He's impossible to pin down. He's escaping from prisons. So he had to get extradited to the States. El Chapo's like one of the most notorious drug dealers in the history of the world, okay? Turns out that his wife, who's a 31-year-old former beauty queen, was arrested at Dulles International, that's just outside D.C., and is expected to appear in federal court in Washington today. Okay? Her arrest is the latest twist in this bloody multinational saga involving El Chapo. Turns out that the feds think that she was specifically involved in helping him not only run the drug cartel, but also escaping him from prison twice. Now, I want you to just kind of picture this. She's a 31-year-old former beauty queen. Okay, so she's not some grizzled, aging, you know. She's 31, and she used to be a beauty pageant queen. And not that long ago, and now the feds are like, oh yeah, she's like number two in the drug cartel, okay? So she's charged with conspiracy to distribute cocaine, meth, heroin, marijuana, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on and on. But the details. Now, she has apparently helped the prison breaks, which are just the stuff of legend. In one case, he escaped through an entry under the prison shower to a mile-long lighted tunnel with a motorcycle waiting, and that she played a key role in this. The plot included her purchasing land near the prison buying the firearms and an armored truck and smuggling him a GPS so that they could pinpoint the exact whereabouts of him in that tunnel and helped organize the construction of the tunnel. Now, you might say, well, DA, this is crazy because she's El Chapo's wife, and he, I'm sure, organized this, and she didn't really know much about it. They're just tagging it to her. But how about this? She is the daughter of another drug kingpin. So he married the daughter of a drug empire. She happened to be a beauty queen, but she knew the business inside and out. She knows the inner workings of this. The two are 30 years apart. She's 31. He's in his 60s. So how about this, folks, that El Chapo's beauty queen wife arrested at Dulles International, going to be in court today in D.C., and she might be just as dangerous as he is.
Yeah, and we're just saying a lot. I mean, I don't know. The gap between them might be bigger than the gap between Trevor Lawrence and Zach or Luke Wilson at the moment. Uh-huh, but yeah, sure, I mean, yeah. This lady is not messing around. However she compares to hubby, you do not want to anger her either, it sounds, because she can't go to him. She can go to her dad to get the revenge on you. So yeah, I'm afraid, and I'm glad I'm in New York and not in D.C. because this is a crazy, crazy story. I don't know if this is factual or not, but the tunnel thing, I don't know if you watched Narcos, but Narcos, the last two seasons, actually, El Chapo, a young El Chapo. No, of course you don't watch Narcos. You barely watch Breaking Bad. But Narcos on Mexico, on Netflix, he's been in the last two seasons. And in the last one, they built a tunnel underneath the U.S.-Mexico border to try and get coke from a house that they bought across the border, sneaking to the American side to then sell it here in the States. So El Chapo has a deep history with tunnels to commit crimes, it appears.
So I like this story because it does show that...
You like love stories. You're a romantic at heart, and you love true love and people going the extra mile for each other.
You knew where I was going with this. So yes, I love true love stories, and I love also when life brings you together with somebody of like mind. You know, I mean, this is who could be a more perfect wife for El Chapo than the daughter of a drug kingpin? It's perfect. She knows the family business. It's like you run your own auto body shop and then you find a girl that happens to have grown up in an auto body shop as well. And you're like, wow, you know the business. You get me. El Chapo saying that to his wife. You get me. You understand murdering people for the drug trade. You understand building mile-long tunnels and having motorcycles waiting at the end. You get me. We have to be together. Even though we're 30 years apart, we have to be together. So that's the part that really warms my heart here. El Chapo found a kindred soul, a kindred spirit.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
I don't know how people do it. I don't know how you date multiple people at the same time. I don't mean in necessarily a nefarious way, just like when you're single and you're out playing the field, and especially nowadays when you can see what people are doing on Instagram or Facebook. Like, I don't know how you could have multiple balls in the air. I've always been focused on one lady at a time. So Jason Collier is the exact opposite of me. He is the police chief in tiny Stinnett, Texas. He is married to, I assume, a wonderful woman named Opal, but had at least two girlfriends. He proposed to one of them in November and to another in December. So one actual marriage, two fiancés. Things were going well for Jason, too, until girlfriend number one outed him on the Facebook page of the Stinnett Police Department. The other two women soon were involved, and Collier was obviously in trouble and embarrassed, but it was mostly just personal trouble and embarrassment. But then One of the fiancés shared an annulment document that he showed to her to prove that his marriage was over so that he could be all of hers. However, he allegedly forged that annulment document, and now recently he's been arrested by the Texas Rangers for forging a government document. So his really tangled love web has now gotten him in trouble with the legal system and not just three angry women.
Stinnett, Texas, for those wondering, in the northwest corner of Texas, about an hour and 45 minutes from the New Mexico border. It's outside Amarillo, so it is out there. As you said, it's a fly speck on the map. So you're telling me that this guy had a wife. Do we know how long he was married for?
So, I mean, this is happening basically almost in real time, and he was at least, wow, according to one of the fiancés, married to this woman up until 2016. That was his story, that they had split and got the marriage annulled in 2016. So, I mean, it's a multiple-year marriage. If it's still technically, legally going on right now, and he says it ended back in 2016, it obviously predates that. So it's got to be 5-6 years old at least, right?
So this guy's got a wife that he's not officially divorced from and two fiancés that he's proposed to. Two of them. So effectively, there's three full-time women in your life. You know what they always say is that if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. If you got three wives, you got none. At this point, you've got to make sure you focus here. And it's kind of like what I was saying before, that today in 2021, everything is at your fingertips all the time. You feel like you can just collect and hoard and do all these things. I'll have it all. I can have it all. Well, no, it doesn't really work that way. You're going to have to choose the wife, okay? You're going to have to get one of those, one fiance. Does this mean he's also paid for three engagement rings? Three of them? Because one is usually enough for most guys. This guy found the resources to spend, what, 6 weeks of pay on three different women? I mean, what is the Stinnett police chief make that he can spend on three engagement rings?
I mean, it must be nice, or maybe these ladies don't need fancy rings to accept his love and his hand in marriage. But yeah, I mean, and just all of these things, all of the stories, the background, like, what did we do last Tuesday? When's your birthday? When's our anniversary? Like, I can barely remember my one set of information. How is this guy not tripping up? I mean, and he didn't do something necessarily to trigger this. There was a post on the Facebook page that got one of the fiancés to respond to it. And then all hell broke loose. So, I mean, he seems to have been doing a good job at keeping at least these three women. And there may be more down the story that other women have now popped up being like, yeah, I dated him too or whatever. So, like, this guy is, how does he have time to be the sheriff? He's just all over town with women.
This is extraordinary. Also, Stinnett, Texas is a dot. It has a total population of 1,800 people. Which my guess is we have people listening right now where their high school was bigger. That's like twice my high school. Could you imagine being engaged or married to three women in the town the size 1,800 people? 1,800. So that means there's like 900 women and you're engaged or married to three of them. That's incredible. Like, you are married or engaged to one out of 300 women in your hometown. One out of every 300 women you are married currently to or engaged to. I mean, how do they not find out? This is not a big town. And he's chief. He's also the sheriff, so he's got a notable position.
I think, yeah, one of the women was in Kansas, but even that, I don't know how far away she was. And if she was far away, what was his excuse for randomly going to Kansas over and over again for conjugal visits with fiancé number two? Yeah, like, where is, I hate to like downplay the thing, I need to know the logistics of this. How did he figure this out? How did he pull it off? How did he see them all enough to keep them happy? And one of them was his actual wife, who you'd think would have to get like another level of treat. Like, that's who he lives with. So like, what story is he telling her to get away from her to go be with these other two women, at least two?
He has convinced his first wife that there's a lot of crime on the streets of Stinnett, and he's got to be out there for all of it. He's a, baby, this job's killing me. I haven't seen you in 3 weeks. I know. Stinnett, we've got three stoplights and a Loves, but I can't stop the crime on the streets, baby. I got to be out there.
She's walking around thinking this is the dirtiest town in America, that there's crime left and right. Nothing bad has happened, meanwhile, in reality in years. But she thinks he's constantly out just finding bad dudes and arresting them.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
After reports surfaced yesterday that there could be a reunion between Cam and the Patriots, our poll question today, do the Pats need Cam? Does Cam need the Pats? Or is it a disaster either way? 74% of you, overwhelming majority, said it's a disaster either way. 21% said Cam needs the Patriots. Only 5% felt like the Patriots needed Cam, which is weird because the Patriots have a better solution right now. I assume that they will. Cam had only 2,600 yards through the air, the fewest in team history for a quarterback that started at least 15 games. Second-year punter Jake Bailey had 21 more yards on his punts this season than Cam did on his passes. The punter had more yards than Cam had through the air. That's a problem. Now, we just did this story on West Texas, and Mike right now is in Amarillo, Texas, here on the DA Show. Mike, good morning.
Hey, Dave, how you doing? Can I get a beam up, homie?
Well, I would give you the zap. There you go. Yes, sir. What's up?
Perfect. Hey, you know what? I just want to hit on this police chief over here in Stinnett. Yeah, I'm just a short road trip away. That dude's actually up to like 13 to 17 women, come to find out.
No, are you serious?
I swear. I put that on my girls. So his whole deal was he couldn't be posted on social media because he was an elected figure. So I guess that's how he got away with it. And if you've seen this guy's picture, he's not the world-class gigolo that you might say. He's not a good-looking guy by any means.
Oh my
so
God.
I guess that's just the options there in Stinnett. But if you've been through Stinnett, man, it's not a beautiful town by any means.
Mike, thanks for the info. That's incredible. That's incredible. He's up to 13 to 17 women now. He's getting exposed. Who has the time? Who has the energy? Who has the funds? Who has the money to be courting, siring 17 women? And it's a small town. How can you not know? How can you not see that guy? There's probably one movie theater. How can you not see that guy at the one restaurant? How can you not see that guy at the one gas station with one of his other 17 women?
And I don't want to celebrate the guy, but it almost like seems like he should teach a class or write a book about his ability to do this. Maybe he can put those powers to better use. But that's an amazing balance of time and effort and energy.
Yeah, work for like the detective agency for the state of Texas. I mean, you're wasting your talents here by being an undercover operative. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning. I could not blow up my snow tube. Here it is.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
I'm going to treat the snow like I'm having fun with it. That way I'm flipping the relationship. And
have fun with your snow.
Have fun with your snow.
Have fun with your marriage.
So I said, I'm going to go get a snow tube. Now I'm going to go sleigh ride. I go to Target, and they're like, oh, we've been sold out of sleds forever.
Yep.
No!
They got a pool toy, okay? They got a pool inflatable donut. And I'm like, all right, this will work. I only need it for like a day. I start trying to blow this thing up. It is impossible. I would need an iron lung assisting me. It is impossible.
Wow, that's gross.
I am sitting on the couch in our living room trying to blow up a pool toy in February to go sledding for 20 minutes. My wife comes out of the basement. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm still blowing up this thing. She goes, I can hear you downstairs. Are you like choking to death? How are they making inflatables? That, to me, come on here, help us out. I'm not a smoker. I'm in good shape, and I still can't blow up the pool toy.
Yeah.
You say it in jest, but can there be as many as six in this year's draft?
You almost have to like bite the nozzle, like to break a seal,
yeah,
to get the air in. I think it's designed to prevent the air from coming back out after you,
yes,
blow some in. But that adds a whole other level of skill to this operation that,
yes,
I also do not have.
Yeah.
And then you need like my little foot pump then sometimes doesn't get in enough to like puncture this safety membrane thing. And you're right, you got nothing. You're dead in the water.
You guys are losers. You know that?
It was brutal.
Or and you have emphysema. That maybe you need to go see a doctor. Maybe you have no lung capacity.
I could be Jody Mack at this point.
This is really guesswork here.
You know, Jody can do it in 2 seconds, by the way. It took you 2 hours. One breath for Jody.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We had some callers suggest some alternatives. One said, how about an air compressor? Yeah, I got that. I actually tried that. I don't have the right nozzle to blow up an inner tube. I got something for my tires on my car or something for like an air gun or a staple gun, but I don't have anything for a freaking snow tube. And one guy said, just go to your local tire shop and get one of their inner tubes for a tire. Well, now you tell me. Thanks to Sam Rubinoff on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Pete the Body Velotti, your executive producer. Thanks to Andrew Bogish, a.k.a. Arnold Bogus. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan. I'm DA, the Mothership Disconnect.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.